Are you an insider? Subscribe to FC Insiders today to receive full unedited interviews, news, rumors, exclusive content, and more. Join FC Insiders at futurecommerce.fm.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex is the leader of tax technology solutions and services for corporations worldwide. They're trusted by over half of the Fortune 500. Vertex Cloud meets sales and use tax solutions for businesses of all kinds. Visit them online today at vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Their software enables truly personalized one-to-one interactions between marketers and customers across all channels. They help you build loyalty and enrich the customer journey while increasing your revenue. Go to emarsys.com/futurecommerce to request a demo and see for yourself how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions. That's Emarsys, emarsys.com/futurecommerce. Hello and welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Philip.
I'm Brian.
And we have more news than you can shake a VR stick at today. before we go shaking our sticks around, we want you to never miss an episode of Future Commerce. Make sure that you go and like and subscribe. We are everywhere that podcasts exist, and we can be listened to at any time from any smart speaker device. All the time. And we want to be in your ears all the time. We want to have a better relationship with you. It's not you, it's us. No, I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm super excited about today's show, and I don't want you to ever miss another one after today. So make sure you go hit us up at futurecommerce.fm and sign up for our FC Insiders, and that's your best way of staying in touch with what's going on in everything Future Commerce land. Okay, Brian.
This is episode 75, so I mean, they really could be listening to us all the time. Like if you're just
really coming
to the show, you can go back and listen to 75, nearly about 75 hours worth of content.
Yeah. It's a lot of content. We're coming up on a 2-year anniversary too. And we got a lot of really cool things planned. Man, we're coming into conference season pretty soon. We're going to be at a bunch of different places. So keep your eyes peeled. And again, FC Insider is the best place to stay in touch of where we're going to be and when we'll be speaking at various events and what shows we'll be attending in the fall. Don't miss it. Okay. Can we talk about how the world is going crazy for a bunch of different things right now? Like all of a sudden.
Well, what kind of things are you talking about, Philip?
I mean, everything from like custom teddy bears to all of a sudden it's a sin to use a drinking straw. For the 19th time, I've heard that Magic Leap is coming out with something just a few months from now.
They are.
Yeah, right. I don't believe it. Okay,
they're coming out with something.
Pick one of these stories and let's kick it off.
This summer. There's a lot. It's official.
Is that what we're starting with?
Sure.
Okay. Go ahead. What's the story?
Well, I mean, just that they're shipping their first product this summer. Their first
headset. Magic Leap.
Yes. Yes.
The thing we've been talking about for 75 episodes.
Magic Leap. That means you haven't been listening to the show yet.
Which is okay. It's not, we don't want to shame you. We don't want to FC shame you. We want you to go back and listen. But in the meantime, we'll catch you up.
To be fair,
Magic Leap is...
Just to recap, Philip thinks that Magic Leap is complete nonsense and doesn't really...
It's vaporware. It doesn't actually exist. It's a bunch of really hardware. Really clever 3D models that have been really goofy. I would think that if you're going to make fake headsets that you say are going to come out one day, that you would make them look nicer than
wouldn't
they
it be
do.
Hilarious
they look really stupid.
This headset was literally just the spectacles repurposed. Like they just they bought up all of Snapchat's inventory of spectacles and then snapped a different logo on them, slapped a different logo on those glasses, and then I don't know, just made them look a little bulkier. And
and that wouldn't have been hard to do because they were pretty bulky. Can you believe it's been 2 years since the Snap spectacles came out and nothing has happened with that since?
Yeah, that's super
weird. Crazy.
I mean, they were really minimal functionality. You couldn't do a lot.
Well, they were, but it's like that's what a company that's a software social network releasing a product should do is something minimum viable and then grow it. They did nothing.
They did nothing.
What a sad thing. And that's what I think. That is my prediction about what Magic Leap will do. It will do absolutely nothing.
And I say you're
quote
wrong.
Unquote,
that's what I say.
Spatial computing and mixed reality. I will never be so wrong about anything as I'm going to be about this, but that's okay. I'd rather be super right on like a lark than be, and then be just flat wrong. And we can all laugh about how wrong I was. But it sounds like they've got partnerships in place. AT&T is going to be, it's like a carrier partner for their wireless, which, you know, why would you go with like admittedly probably the worst wireless carrier in the United States? Anyway, I it's interesting.
Wait, you don't like AT&T?
No, I think AT&T is terrible.
Interesting. I think they're overpriced.
Said the guy who's still on Project Fi like 2 years after he said he was leaving. all right. So anyway, so Magic Leap, yeah, definitely, sort of, definitely shipping. This is, I hear this every 3 months and we'll see 3 months from now. I'm going to make a prediction. October 1st, we'll still have nothing. We'll be well past summer and there will be no such thing as a Magic Leap device. But we do have a $199 entry level. Oh, shoot. What's the name? What's the VR headset? Self-contained VR headsets. Now,
Oculus Go.
Yeah, the Oculus Go. That does exist and nobody's talking about it. Isn't that crazy?
I mean, it's not that surprising. Like the reviews said it was fun, but it wasn't like
not that surprising.
Life-changing.
I mean, we're going back to like I think we had talked about this back in March or May or something like that. I would have assumed that there would be a lot more fanfare around it than what we've seen. Okay, anyway, maybe technology adoption is just slower than I anticipated
being.
Actually,
that's something I did want to talk about today, but maybe we can get into that later. But just the sort of the promise of technology and like how consistently I think it never comes about in the time frame.
Disappointing? It doesn't come about in the way that you think it will. Right.
Anyway, let's talk about something that is like it's super relevant to commerce right now. How about that?
Yeah, actually, you know what? Can we talk about Build-A-Bear?
Let's talk about Build-A-Bear. That's a great idea.
Here's a store that if you had asked me a year ago, I said would have gone bankrupt well before Toys R Us. Overpriced teddy bears
pricey.
$30 for a teddy bear. That's pretty pricey. And then you've got like, you know, all these accessories and upsell. You can easily walk out spending $50 on bears, not, you know, clothing notwithstanding. Really interesting experiential retail business model, but you have to wonder like how much they can ride a fad, right? Like, because those are the kinds of things that, you know, these kinds of companies tend to overexpand. While they're hot. And then once the market decides that they're kind of over the fad or a lot of copycats pop up, then it's like done. It's as done gets. But for whatever reason, it's impressive. Build-A-Bear seems to have some legs. And so they've actually sort of revitalized a little bit in that they've been hyping this, you know, coming promotion that they were going to do. And today, as we speak, time of recording, there are massive lines queuing all over US and UK because Build-A-Bear did a really innovative, probably potentially profit and business killing promotion today where you pay your age for a bear or any stuffed animal. So any stuffed animal in the store, you can pick and pay your age. So if you have a 3-year-old, you know, she's going to get the bear for $3, and which I just think is fascinating. And so did hundreds of thousands of people because people, they are going nuts. And, you know, people that probably haven't shopped a Build-A-Bear in years are queuing up and malls are shutting down. People are citing like, you know, massive lines. I have like 30 people I know on Facebook right now are like Facebook live videos of malls that have like stanchions that are wrapping around and around and around. It's bigger. It is bigger than any iPhone release I've ever seen at my local mall. It's crazy. I'm not kidding. I was there for the original iPhone release 10 years ago and it was nothing like this. This is pandemonium. Pandemonium. What do you so I wanted to kind of talk about this a little bit because I've seen this in a few different ways. It's a creative promotion. It's a product that people kind of get to build themselves. It's a fun experience. It's not a short thing. you do pay a premium for it, but they have this whole script they go through and they stuff the bear and the kid gets to put the heart in it and there's a bunch of upsells. It's really fascinating,
I've done this with all of my kids, you know, and they all love their bears that they got. And, you know, it was an interesting process and I think kids absolutely love it. And so when parents can take their kids to do something that's interesting to their kids, that has a lasting effect, and a promotion that's sort of like almost, you know, it's one of those too good to be true promotions, if you will. Like, it's an irresistible offer, and those bears last a long time. Like my oldest sons,
a lifetime. Why wouldn't they? I mean,
yeah. So you know, I think it's one of those things where people are like, oh yeah, we've been wanting to do this for a long time, or we have that bear and we love that bear, or that stuffed animal, and yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I you know, kind of wonder. You know, here's a retailer that's doing something interesting in a mall and driving traffic to a mall. You know, if I was a mall, I'd want to build a bear in my mall. you have to wonder if Toys R Us had purchased Build-A-Bear or copied Build-A-Bear or, you know, done something similar like in-store customization, you know, and created more storied approach to what was going on in the ways of interacting with their customers, if they would still be around right now instead of now finally closed. Like, you look at other innovative toy brands like Funko. We've talked about Funko a lot on this show, but they've done all kinds of interesting things with their toys and their stories and their experiential retail. I think what this is proving is, you know, find ways of engaging with your customers that they love. And then when you do promotions and you do, you know, you do go, you know, after them, they're going to show up because they love your stuff.
Yeah, 100%. But I think that like the way that these have panned out is they've actually carved out really interesting niches for themselves that sort of allow you to age into other brands. So you might start with Build-A-Bear in this experience, but when you get a little bit older, you know, I mean, it might be kind of sort of gender divided, but American Girl has a very similar type of experience for an older demographic. Right. And having story that's kind of woven into it. Now, Build-A-Bear went heavy into licensing at some point, and maybe they've been doing this for a long time, but I noticed like it's like maybe 60-40 split of mostly licensed goods now. So they do a lot of Marvel. They're doing a lot of like, you know, DreamWorks. Like they've got recognizable characters that the kids identify with, and then they get to customize from there.
That's a really interesting point. That's what Funko did too. And what they did was brought in their own original artists, you know, and created essentially it's like iterating off of licensed brands, things that people absolutely love already. But instead of just going the standard route, they're going and doing something creative with it, you know, getting outside the box.
This actually reminds me, this reminds me of a book that's often cited in a bunch of podcasts that I listen to. It's a book called Superheroes, A Modern Mythology by Richard Reynolds. And it comes up all the time. But I find it endlessly fascinating that our modern mythology is sort of pervasive around superheroes, comic books, you know, mythical characters. You know, my kids are super into How to Train Your Dragon.
Totally. No,
it's interesting
just,
how this, like,
not just superheroes,
this modern mythology.
Yeah, totally. It's not just superheroes. It's all kinds of mythology. Like anything that's sort of like, you know, in that range of beyond human has done well.
Right.
You look at, you know, fantasy and, you know, and sort of like the whole Harry Potter and Twilight and Lord of the Rings and, you know, all of that, anything that has sort of an in-depth, like long history of consistent storytelling, that's usually got to have some sort of a loyal fan base. And that's,
And apparently a tie-in to retail experiences as well. you know, and I think when you get older, yeah, if you're, you know, Funko appeals to a particular, you know, crowd. I think even when you're looking, you know, this, something that caught my eye this week, was a story on Adweek about a brand that I wasn't familiar with before called Consortium.
Yes.
Creative Consortium.
This is super cool.
Apparently, so Consortium is sort of like a bespoke clothing bag, jean sort of designer pop-up is going on a bit of a retail tour, but they allow you to make customizations to their products and sort of choose and design your product right there in the pop-up. It's not clear to me, because I've not been, and I've only read one article about it. It's not clear to me if they produce it right there on the spot and you get it like on the other side, or if you're just sort of custom designing it and it comes to you later. At any rate, there's a lot of this happening right now in retail. I was walking by a Coach store at the Palm Beach Gardens Mall, sort of a high-end mall here in West Palm Beach. And I noticed that they have a luggage tag embosser in the window display at the front of the store now. And you can, you know, it's at a price point, I think $40 or $70, something like that. But you could go in and have a small like piece of Coach that you custom design and emboss with emojis and, you know, your name on a luggage tag. And it's leather and it's Coach and it says Coach on the one side, but you can put your own creative element with custom foils and stamps and that sort of thing. I think that that's insane that a brand like Coach or these brands like Consortium are capitalizing on our need to have affiliation with, you know, certain types of goods or luxury goods and be able to take that sort of personalized stamp and apply it to that brand. It's a different way of engaging with brand and retail.
I wonder who powered that embossing. You should go back and see like what tech they're using for that. I remember that a few years back, I think two NRF big shows ago, Xerox was there with like an on-site customizer machine. And they were making a really big deal of it. And I think they had some really interesting, like you could use all kinds of colors and you could emboss and you could do all kinds of interesting customizations with it. I totally agree with you. I think in-store on the spot personalization is going to become a bigger thing. I think this Build-A-Bear, this Build-A-Bear example is a great, you know, it's kind of showing that people love that. And I mean, I think that's been true, but you know, you have to think like card stores, like physical, like greeting card stores, that would be a great place to have customization on site.
The thing is that greeting card stores have been doing custom invitation, wedding invitation, bar and bat mitzvah for decades, you know, hundreds of years. Back when calligraphy and like handmade, you know, calligraphy and monogramming was still a thing. The fact is that Build-A-Bear itself was, you know, had to get very creative in the way that it reappealed to an Amazon-centric household who doesn't go to the mall as much anymore. They had to give them a reason that they couldn't refuse to come back.
Right.
Right. And I think that's the other story here is that people still want this experience, but it's going to have to be an offer they can't refuse to get them back into the door and get them to buy back into the experience and remember what kind of a joy it was.
Maybe. I mean, I think that's true, but those kinds of offers happen all the time. They just happen with brands that have no, like, the offer gets lost in the noise. You know what I mean? Like, JCPenney goes and offers, oh, we're giving out clothing for a dollar. Everything in the store is a dollar, right? Like, or, you know, something along those lines. I mean, you probably would get some noise, but Build-A-Bear has a storied brand. And I think that really helps play into the offer. You know what I mean? It's so recognizable versus pennies.
The thing that gets me really excited is that, you know, I want this to come more into the realm of the things that like I'm excited about, which there was the Nike Kicks Lounge in Japan. has some things super similar cool. to this. There's a video on YouTube where they actually did a thing where you can buy like triple white colorways of particular, you know, silhouettes of shoes. So if you have like the Nike Air Max or, you know, some other shoe, it's rare to find them in like all white, like everything is white. You can buy them, you can find them, but they come out in limited releases. You usually have to buy them resale. They carry them, and that's all pretty much they carry in the store specifically for customization. So artists are in the store, and it takes 20 to 30 minutes for the artist to like basically make the shoe the way that you want the shoe to be made and designed. Everything from like, you know, graffiti-esque airbrushing to paint splatters to intricate painting, or, you know, all of those things are kind of being done right there on the spot. And they actually dry them. They dry the paint with heat guns and fans, and you can walk right out with the shoe. I think that that's really
that's
compelling.
Super compelling. It's almost like going to a tattoo parlor. Like, like you bring yeah. in your design, or like you say, you know, here's a general idea of what I want. And then, you know, you're walking out with something that's going to last you for a long time. That's going to be really specific to you. I mean, I think the big question that I have in all this is like the in-store experience versus just, you know, ordering this ahead of time. I think there's something really cool about that tangible in-store, like community, you know, being in your community, like being connected to artists in your community, being able to talk yeah. to them and really like, it's almost like commission what you want. Well, it's kind of, I don't know.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. It's a deeper, more meaningful experience exactly. with the product. Because you were there yep. when it was created, right? It's like you own a home and you love your home, but there's something yeah. special about building a home
yeah.
and designing a home, right? Like it's so uniquely yours, and you put a lot of thought and labor and care into all the little pieces. I'm not saying that paint splatter on a shoe is the same, but you know, you have a
totally.
More personal connection.
Well, and
to
I think that, you know, this is going to play into things that last longer, like shoes last a long time, or like it'd be cool to see like jackets or coats, you know, something that you're going to keep around for a few years at least. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be high enough quality, where you're going to want to keep it. And I wonder, like, again, like, do you have to walk out with it right then? Cause you go in and like have a meaningful experience with someone that's working with you on something custom, and then, you know, come back and get it later or have it shipped to your house afterwards. I think that's fine. Actually, I think this is not an
potentially
gratification
yeah.
type product where you have to have it in the moment. It's cool. It's certainly cool, but you know, never underestimate the power of anticipation as well.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex provides cloud and on-premise solutions that can be tailored to specific industries. For every major line of tax, including sales and use, income, value added, and payroll. Vertex Cloud is the SaaS solution that automates sales and use tax, including calculation and returns. With multiple service levels and flexible pricing models, Vertex Cloud meets the sales and use tax needs for businesses of all sizes. From recognizable brands like Honda, Pepsi, Verizon, and small businesses the world over. Find out more today at vertexsmb.com, and be sure to mention Future Commerce Podcast to get 15 months for the price of 12. Once again, that's vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Powered by artificial intelligence, the Emarsys marketing platform enables truly personalized interactions between marketers and customers across all channels, building loyalty, enriching the customer journey, and increasing your revenue. Each day, Emarsys connects more than 2,200 brands with 3.2 billion customers all over the world. Emarsys delivers over 350 million personalized interactions across email, mobile, social, and web. To learn more about how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions and actions, visit emarsys.com/futurecommerce and request your demo today. That's Emarsys, emarsys.com/futurecommerce. Well, you think about other stores that have capitalized heavily on the in-store design experience. You know, Home Depot definitely does that with, you know, all kinds of things from, you know, garage right. doors to custom closets to, you know, maybe even paint colors to some degree. Lots of companies, you know, that's a good portion of their business model. I was thinking about, you know, we bought a house a few years ago, and we had a large walk-in closet. We didn't know what to do with the space. And we accidentally found ourselves in the Container Store. Turns out there's a whole thing right. where they 3D model your closet and they can show you the, you know, what a custom closet will be like. And I have to wonder, like, that's got to be a bigger part of their professional services business and part of their larger service offering that is a substantial part of their growth model. That's not just right. selling Tupperware.
Right.
For the Container Store. You know what I mean?
True. And then actually, you think about technology now that's enabling this in your home. And, you know, like one thing that I wanted to mention on the show was I feel like Amazon's really been pushing their AR functionality. I don't even want to call it an app. It's not an app. It's functionality. It's like you said, you know, you've said many times on this show, AR is not going to be one of those things where it's like, oh, I'm going into AR now. It's just something your phone right. does now. It's just, oh yeah, let's see right. what this looks like in the house. You know, I wonder if there'll be more like on the spot collaboration and on the spot, a service like, you know, it's not in-person service, it's in-home service live over an AR, you know, with an AR stream where you're designing or talking about like how things could look or like, you know, if I was an interior decorator right now, I would be designing my business around being able to service nationally from, you know, regardless of service representative location and be able to, you know, go around and design an entire house using AR and sort of like co-designing with your, you know, with your clients. That would be really cool. But yeah, no, I just thought it was really interesting that Amazon's been starting to finally make a big push in this category as well with Prime Day coming up. I don't know if you've seen any of their ads around this functionality in their app yet, but
the AR. I saw there was somebody posted a Twitter link on some of the functionality that you can use for buying mm-hmm. like a TV on Prime Day or something. And I know I'd mentioned maybe like 6 or 7 months ago on the show that I accidentally discovered that the Amazon app on my phone that I already had yep. already has AR functionality in it. Like I had to put a dollar bill up on the wall for reference, but yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. 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 So it's becoming more ubiquitous. What I find really interesting is that, you know, we're finding more interesting uses of commerce around augmented reality. We're kind of switching gears a little bit here. But we had a story that we didn't get to, I think on the last episode around Adidas, Adidas using Snapchat's new AR shopping tool. And that, you know, Nike. I guess there's a few other companies that are sort of deep into it. But you know, basically it's, you know, Snapchat's been heavily sort of experimenting around things like location-based stickers, location-based AR experiences, and shoppable AR coming into store with Snapchat seems to be an interesting play that, you know, Adidas would have around some of their tentpole stores. So I think we're going to see more and more and more of this. And hopefully they find their way into the apps that already exist on our phones where we don't have to download, you know, a 7,000th app that only does this particular thing. It's already frustrating that I have, you know, 7 footwear apps on my phone. I don't want to have to install, you know, a separate one.
Apps using them for like a few seconds and then uninstalling them recently. I feel like I've been doing that a lot lately. I don't know.
I feel like I'm doing the opposite of that in that I have more and more and more and more.
Oh, you're just
more
like actually every single day. I feel like there used to be that study, like no one's downloading apps anymore. Like what's the average number of apps yeah. that people download per month? The answer is zero. It's less than 0.5%, blah, blah, blah. I feel like maybe that's picked up again. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's just personal.
I feel like for me, it definitely has. So recently I downloaded the Whole Foods app. Thank you, Amazon. It's my like 11th Amazon app that I have. I needed the Prime discount, right? But you know, I've gotten some other recent ones. Like, okay, we're way off in a tangent, but it's fun. There's another app that I downloaded called Clarity.
What's that?
It's a budget. Oh, it's nice. A budgeting app. So I'm giving up all of my financial data. I realize this. Don't at me, bro. Giving up my financial information to some random company who I didn't know. And what they did is they like scraped through all your transactions. They show you all the recurring transactions that you have across all your bank accounts. So they actually show you, this is how much you're spending every month on a bunch of stuff you might not be using anymore. I'm like, we still have ABC Mouse? Like, oh my gosh, we should probably cancel that. And but it's interesting because I am finding that I'm installing way more apps, and maybe that's because I'm aging into a demographic that or I maybe have 100 apps on my phone.
We went through a period where app development sort of stagnated, and now newer technologies or business partnerships or things have allowed us to finally start finding, you know, new uses or new ways of using apps. I feel like that's kind of true. Like,
potentially, yeah. Shoppable Instagram, to me, if Instagram has AR, which it does because it does a bunch of face filters and stuff like that. But if it did true augmented reality, shoppable Instagram, using that as a like, if I could use that in Starbucks as my payment app, I would 100% do that. Like, I would totally do that. I might use it for a million other things too. So Instagram is a platform and not a social network.
Yeah, totally.
Super compelling.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, most people already have Instagram downloaded, but there's just other things that have just popped up where it's like, oh yeah, I decided I'm going to actually install this. Like, I don't know. It's interesting. It's starting to happen more, and I think it's because of new technology or new business partnerships. So,
yeah. Speaking of Starbucks, since I mentioned
more
paying
apps
in Starbucks,
then you can shake a
I'm
straw.
I'm really good
at.
With the. That's so good. We're like killing it with the segues today. Starbucks is eliminating straws globally by 2020, giving every adult a sippy cup instead. The way that they introduced this to us too was, I'm really sad. I got really used to the sippy cups with the nitro cold brew, and now I'm like, oh, I kind of like the sippy cup. So they've sort of incepted me to want the sippy cup before they got rid of the straw. Which is interesting, but they apparently this is a big deal for them. The green straw is iconic. I'm interested because I didn't see it in the press release. Everyone's talking about it. But do you think that this potentially heads toward? I mean, definitely this. So, okay, just if you're not aware of the actual story, the story is that. Cold beverages account for more than 50% of Starbucks beverage mix in the U.S., which is up 37% from 5 years ago. So congratulations on creating a brand new, like recreating and reinvigorating, another year-round, seasonality for coffee consumption. Outside of just the Frappuccino, they have all kinds of other cold drinks now, which is really interesting. And a little bit of innovation there. I could go on and on and on. But that means that along with it, they've definitely are helping to contribute even more to those, plastic cup and plastic green straw, being part of the their green commitment basically is telling them they need to find a way to scale back. So they're cutting out the straws by 2020. What's really crazy about that is if they're going to sippy cups, can I still request a straw? And if so, is it going to be a paper straw? And if so, do I have to pay for it? That's the question
I
need
Seattle,
to have answered.
You won't even be able to request a straw because they banned plastic straws. Or I guess, plastic. Yeah, paper.
But would you take a paper? Would you take
a paper straw recently? And honestly, it wasn't that bad. It was fine. I don't know why some people complain about them. I thought it was just fine.
Oh my word. It's interesting. I mean, the other trend is that you sort of carry your own straw around, like plastic or like those, recyclable totes that everyone has 3,000 of, when you only ever need one. Metal straws are a big thing. Reusable metal straws.
No, metal straws, reusable straws, not a chance. I mean, I'm not going to carry a straw around. I can tell you that right now. Maybe some people would, but I mean, it's just kind of gross. Like, you know, what would you put it in? You'd put it in something. I don't know. You have like your straw carrying case. Maybe there's a telescopic straw that you whip out.
Yeah, it's like what you know, those canes that sort of like unfold that like you can whip out and like it goes clack, 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 clack. There are straws that do that. Which I find really interesting.
I think the biggest question that I have is, what's going to produce more backwash, straw or a sippy cup?
Show title. I find it incredible because the timing is sort of conspicuous. Like not even 3 months ago, Dunkin' Donuts was bragging that they're getting rid of styrofoam by 2020. So the timing of Starbucks getting rid of plastic straws seems to be quite conspicuous. Both of those are kind of iconic. The green straw, the Starbucks or the Dunkin' styrofoam cup, those are big changes.
This goes to show is it's time for brands to like make big changes that even affect their brand if it means improving their environmental impact. Or bringing their company into the 21st century. Like there are a lot of companies out there that cling to things from the past because they feel like they'll hurt their brand or they won't be as recognizable if they leave those things behind. I think this is a great, really positive example of companies that are saying, you know what, it's not worth it. It's not worth it to us or to the world to continue with this.
I remember hearing a talk a few years ago about the sort of, you know, the great garbage problem that we have in our oceans and how so much plastic is polluting the oceans and how it's become sort of like its own landmass, you know. And I forget who gave the talk. I believe it was a Magento Imagine conference a few years ago. Out of some of that awareness, there was a company that Adidas is heavily invested in. I don't know if that it's a nonprofit or a not for profit, but they're a company called Parley for the Oceans, which is specifically, going toward trying to find a reuse for some of the harvested plastic that comes out of marine plastic pollution. And Adidas has found an interesting way to create an even more expensive running shoe using that recycled plastic that's 95% made from that recycled material. There could be an interesting way of, there's definitely a social good message here. There's definitely an eco message here. But I also think that there are other interesting uses of business of and technology, especially around textiles, that could come out of some of this, you know, that, could give new life and create new jobs in new areas and spur some innovation. I'm kind of bullish on this. I think it's really,
that is really cool.
But you're not gonna have an expandable straw. You're not gonna carry one around. I might.
Well, Philip will, but
anything else? No, about
I
that?
Think actually there's two different. I think it's interesting. There's actually two different things here that I just kind of want to separate them. One is sort of new products based off of ways of, you know, of being more environmentally friendly, and the other one is revolutionizing existing offerings. And I think both are important. I think there's going to be opportunities for both going forward. And you're going to need to look for both. It's not just, oh yeah, we're getting rid of straws. It's, oh yeah, look, we've created a new product because there's new ways of building things that make sense. And maybe they cost a little bit more, but people are willing to pay a premium for something that is, you know, it's better for this world. So that's two different categories, I think, similar, but yeah.
Yeah. That's been the case for some time too, right? Like, yeah, that's, we'll self-select, to spend a little more if we feel like that there's a greater social good that comes out of it. Pretty awesome. I know I will anyway. Interesting timing. So by 2023, we won't have any more styrofoam coffee cups or plastic straws. Or by 2023, Blue Origin, Jeff Bezos' answer to SpaceX, will be colonizing the moon. Which one of those sounds more realistic to you?
Oh my gosh. This is related to that.
What does more harm to the environment? Plastic straws or the massive burning of fossil fuels in solid rocket boosters for us to be able to escape Earth's gravity? So that Jeff Bezos can, show that Elon Musk that he has, a bigger rocket, if you will.
Is this just the space wars of private economy? Like governments aren't as...
Yeah, it's privatization of space. Yeah.
It's just the 1980s all over again, but it's between private companies.
60s, yeah.
The 60s. 60s, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, the 60s space race, but for Lex Luthor types.
Right.
That's
right.
That's the show title. I don't have anything more to say about that other than, what's interesting is Elon was talking about mining an asteroid recently and sort of
just to cut you off right there.
Okay.
All right.
What about the Model 3 is starting to ship?
I'm not talking about him. No.
What about him trying to rescue Thai soccer team?
No.
Okay. So none of these stories you want to talk about?
No, I don't really want to talk about Elon Musk anymore. I don't know. It just seems like he's doing things all the time that are crazy. And I don't know. It just never...
Because he understands the Trump media cycle model now. This is how you dominate public consciousness, for good or for bad. Like, you want to be in front of people all
the time.
He's figured it out.
That's why I don't want to talk about him anymore. This is that kind of... thing, like podcasts like ours talking about Trump, help propel him. It doesn't matter how they talk about him. So I just don't want to talk about Elon anymore.
Right. You just don't care about Elon. I will say this though, I don't know that we've ever actually said the word Trump on this show. What I think is fascinating I love this idea. I would vote for literally any candidate whose platform was
get in front of people.
There will
all
be
the time.
Days at a time. No, their platform is there will be days at a time where you will forget that I even exist. If they could run on that platform, I would vote for that person. Because honestly, there have been times in American government where I forgot that we even had a president. But that doesn't exist anymore. It's always in our consciousness. And that's how Elon Musk feels recently to me as well. He's always in front of us with every single crisis. Now he's, going to provide clean water to everyone in Flint. It's like every week there's something. Okay. Anyway, we've now done exactly what we should have done.
All right. Great job.
Sorry.
This kind of leads into something else that I want to talk about. And it gets back to your whole magic leap never coming thing, which is, it's interesting. We talk about all the time. We talk about the future, right? I mean, that's in the title of our show, right? Future commerce. It's just, I don't know. I feel like the future hasn't been delivering as quickly as we all hoped it would. And I think that's true consistently. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what the next few years bring. I think that a lot of the stuff we've been talking about for the next 2 years are actually going to constitute the technology that commerce, uses for the next 5 years. And I think maybe we talked about this a little bit before already, but we've kind of hit a sweet spot where there's too much to take advantage of, such that the advancement of technology won't happen because we need to capitalize on the technology that's here already. At least within retail and commerce. And so we're going to be talking about similar things, similar partnerships, nothing, maybe iterations of stuff that we've already been talking about, but nothing too much further beyond it, for a while longer. Our show will probably become, future iterations of things that we've already been talking about for a long time, commerce.
It's already happened. It's already happened. Yeah. I think I'm on the record a year ago saying that social commerce is not a thing.
It's not that a thing. It's a thing. It's just something that's, you know, it's happening. It's just taking, you know, social commerce as a concept, it's been around for a long time and it's going to continue to exist and it's exist, you know, in its form for a, you know, for a while longer. It's not that it's not a thing. It's just, it is what it is already.
Wow. Okay. I mean, that's kind of where the evolution of our show will continue. And it has, like, if you go back and you are new to the show, you go back and you listen 2 years ago, we were talking about vastly different things, but with the same sort of analysis and outlook in our, you know, future, as far as we can see into the future through this lens. But I think that's, it's very, very, very interesting where we are in 2018. One thing hasn't changed is that consumers want to experience.
Yes.
I don't think people just want to buy and to have. I think now we're being challenged to have deeper meaning and deeper story and more engaging experiences with products and brands. And that's the challenge. And I think will always be the challenge, you know, as far as I can see.
Yeah, 100% agree. Even at the low end, there's still a story, you know, and I think that that's going to be, and that is sort of the upcoming thing that I think Amazon's going to focus on now as well, is, you know, having those lower end brands tell that story. I think that's enough for today though. We'll talk more about this later.
Woo. Okay. So thank you for listening to Future Commerce. Like we said at the top of the show, we want you to give us feedback about today's topics, and maybe you could do that. Maybe it's easy for you to do that. If you're sitting in front of a computer right now, go over to futurecommerce.fm or whip out your smartphone. Make sure you like and subscribe to us everywhere where you get podcasts. Spotify, we're on iHeartRadio. We're also on Google Podcasts, the new Google Podcast platform. You can listen from any smart speaker device with the phrase Play Future Commerce Podcast. And while you're there, while you're on those podcasting platforms, leave us a review, give us a 5-star. We'd greatly appreciate it. All right, Brian, what is it that we always say that I always mess up?
Oh, retail tech is moving fast.
And future commerce is moving faster. Talk soon.
Bye.